At the legislature today, a bill to make reasonable accommodations to pregnant women in the workplace is passed by the House, but not before debate over whether the fetus should be accommodated as well. And we'll bring you a special report tonight from Governor Tomlin's briefing about the Elk River chemical spill on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. We'll be bringing you highlights from today's briefing by Governor Tomlin and state and federal officials later in our broadcast. But first, more water news from the Senate. The Joint Commission on State Water Resources continued its hearings on last month's chemical leak with the testimony of two members of the medical community, Dr. Rahul Gupta with the Kanawha Charleston Health Department and Dr. Letitia Tierney, Director of the State Bureau of Public Health. Ashton Mara attended the meeting this morning and joins us now with more. Ashton, let's start with Dr. Gupta. What did he have to share with the commission?
So Dr. Gupta recommended beginning what's a long-term medical monitoring program in the nine-county area for anyone who was or may have been exposed to the contaminated water, something that would continue for the next 10 to 20 years. He told lawmakers the most bare bones of these types of programs would cost $150,000 in the first year, but he said that's just for the most basic monitoring, and he would expect that to increase in subsequent years. Gupta, however, urged the commission to look at medical monitoring.
As I've said before, we are unwilling participants of a live human experiment. If you wanted to do this experiment in a human population in a controlled environment today, we would not be able to get the ethics people. I sit on Institutional Review Board of CMC. I would not approve this study if you wanted to do it. So the idea is, this has happened. What can we learn from it going forward? How can we use that to instill and regain the confidence and trust of our community, not now limited to 300,000 people, for all citizens across the state of West Virginia?
Ashton, did Dr. Gupta have other recommendations to make?
Well, first of all, he told lawmakers that his department so far had spent about $100,000 responding to this crisis. But he did have other recommendations. One of those recommendations included creating a hazardous chemical release response plan. These plans were recommended by the U.S. Chemical Safety Board in their investigation at the Bayer facility in 2008. But Gupta says they were never put in place. He says local health departments would work with the Department of Environmental Protection and the Department of Health and Human Resources to create and implement these plans. They would work with the industry then, who would ultimately fund them.
Now, a week ago, we heard testimony before this very same commission that was very shocking to lawmakers and many citizens. Let's review that testimony, if you would.
Sure. Dr. Scott Simonton, who serves on the State Environmental Quality Board, shared his personal test results that found formaldehyde in the water in a downtown Charleston restaurant. Dr. Tierney came out with a response that evening, but today, Tierney was asked about Dr. Simonton's results again. She reassured members of the commission that formaldehyde is a naturally occurring chemical in the environment. She said it is present in the breakdown of plants and animals and even in the human body. And no member of the public should be fearful or anxious of the results that Simonton shared. Senator Unger pressed her about the issue, however, and here's what she had to say.
We literally got pure product and crude product sent to us by the manufacturer of both the PPH, the di-PPH, and the MCHM. They've worked with it. They know that they're pretty stable. The MCHM is a fairly stable chemical, which means that it doesn't easily break apart. It's just sort of the law of chemistry about these carbon bonds. There's so many carbon bonds, it's very, very hard to break apart. When it does, it appears that it just changes conformation, which is a way of saying its shape. And it would be very difficult for it to break into methanol, which is what has been alleged, unless it somehow went through some combustion or catalytic thing at a very high temperature, a temperature higher than you could achieve in a home hot water tank.
There were also some more specific questions about the chemical itself and if the flushing process was really working. Tierney basically explained crude MCHM is not an oil. When you think about putting olive oil in water and that oil will sit on the top, she says MCHM doesn't do that. Tierney also reassured members that the chemical is not sticking to pipes. She says her teams have tested 12 different kinds of pipes in labs, and the chemical does not get gummy and stick to the piping system like some people were afraid it would. She says the chemical makeup allows it to be flushed away. Beth?
Ashton Mara, thank you very much. Today, the House passed House Bill 4284, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. The bill's purpose would be to disallow discrimination against pregnant women in the workplace. The debate on the floor session was not primarily on the bill itself, but rather a proposed amendment, Aaron Payne reports.
The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act would have employers be required to provide reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers. This can range from providing a chair for a cashier to a few minutes of extra break time. Delegates did have a few questions about the details of the bill, including who would determine what accommodations would be proper.
So when there would be requested modifications for someone who is pregnant, that is normally guided by the physician?
Yes, ma'am.
And that physician is historically an OBGYN.
Historically, but not required under this
right.
act.
Or a family practice or a nurse practitioner.
Qualified health care provider, I think is the term we used
Very
in
good.
Defining
Very
it.
Good. Very good.
However, the main topic of debate was on an amendment proposed by Delegate Michael Folk, which would add the unborn fetus of the pregnant worker in the bill's definition of person.
Quite frankly, a vote for this amendment is a vote for the unborn children. The whole purpose of this bill is to protect the mother, which by common sense says you should be protecting the child, too.
Delegates then began to oppose the amendment from a technical standpoint.
But your amendment has a consequence of making a fetus an actual employee. So is the fetus to also be paid a salary?
I don't agree with your assertion that unborn fetus is an employee. See, that's where we disagree.
It's exactly what the amendment does. It adds an entirely new definition to the word person. And under this act, a person who's making a claim is an employee. So are you saying that's not what your intention is?
The intention is what I stated it to be.
What you have to understand is, first of all, if you take a literal reading of this bill, now this bill is not there to protect the mother. This bill is there for a pregnant worker to receive reasonable accommodations so that they can continue work. So, first of all, if you look at his definition and how he wants to change it, it now would basically make it illegal for a fetus to discriminate against a pregnant worker.
Folk proposed another amendment that attempted to clear up the language to better get his point across. Other delegates were concerned that without the amendment, an unborn fetus would not be protected by the bill, asking questions about reasonable accommodations, such as providing bottled water with the CDC's recommendation that pregnant women not drink tap water in place.
Is that reasonable accommodation made on behalf of the pregnant woman or her unborn child, the spring water availability?
On behalf of the pregnant woman, because it's of her pregnancy and a related medical condition.
And to be sure that accommodation was made, you don't believe that this amendment helps the bill?
No, sir. I think it confuses the bill. I think it makes it unwieldy, and I think it will make it impossible for employers to administer it and to react well.
Can an attorney already file suits for unborn children in other instances?
Well, there are certainly criminal laws that apply to injuring an unborn fetus. That's very clear. There is case law that recognizes in wrongful death claims the life of an unborn fetus.
Both amendments were rejected by votes of 34-60 and 38-56. However, the bill passed 94-0 and moves on to the Senate. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne. In the House.
It was a briefing that seemed to be held to reassure West Virginians affected by the Elk River chemical spill. that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has been in the state and on the job since the state of emergency began January 9th. But the briefing turned testy as these representatives tried to explain if the water is safe. Here are some highlights from today's briefing. We begin with State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. James Ferris, describing what happened this morning at Riverview High School and Midland Trail Elementary, closed early and won't open because of a chemical smell.
Firstly, it's important that students and parents and teachers understand that our first priority is making sure that students are safe. And we were made earlier today that there was a odor detected at both Midland Trail and Riverside High School in Kanawha County. The administrators followed their protocol, released their students. Kanawha County received the okay. They had been doing flushing early in the morning. It started at 6 o'clock, and it had not finished whenever the first students arrived. As soon as they detected the odors, however, they sprang into action. Kanawha County had actually received the okay to flush the lines in their schools, not because of the MCH, but because of the discolorization of their water. There had been a water line break earlier in the week. During the end of the flushing process, students did begin to arrive and some complaints began to surface. Those complaints mostly were lightheadedness, burning eyes, burning nose were the symptoms. Those students, and there was one teacher who did faint in the classroom. Those students were immediately taken to the doctors at the health center located there at Riverside High School. One student was transported to a hospital, and the teacher, of course, was transported to a hospital. Two of the students, the issues weren't related to the odors. There was a cook at Midland Trail who we believe, and I have not confirmed yet, that was transported to a local hospital for diagnosis. The administrators are to be commended because they took immediate action. They did what they were supposed to do and followed their protocols. All the other students were released to their parents. We are flushing those two schools as we speak again this afternoon. They were tested earlier as non-detects, both at the 1 parts per million and then in a second test at 10 parts per billion. But the flushing that was done today was basically in relationship, and I know that most of you guys covered it. I saw it on your station about the water break that was in Bell and the lakes that were forming there. But as they were told to do, directed to do, they followed the protocols. They are working with the health officials. We anticipate that the National Guard will either be in there this evening or be in there first thing in the morning to do the test. We will not put the students back into Riverside or Bell until the detect levels are all clear.
So was it a bad call to have that happening when students were arriving this morning? I realize it started much earlier, but was that?
I think they anticipated having the flushing completed before they got there.
And how can we assure parents at other schools that something like this won't happen there?
Well, we're going to rely on the folks here. We're going to rely on, and I really need to bring this up because it seems like we've lost this. We got to trust each other. And that's what I've done through this whole process, is I've trusted the direction from the governor's office. I've trusted direction that and the assistance that we've gotten from General Hoyer. I trust these folks that have stood here, and I don't understand everything they said. I'm a doctor, but I'm not that kind of doctor. I've trusted Dr. Gupta. I've trusted Walter Ivey. And I think Walter's here someplace. But, that's who we rely on. But we know that when the odor was present that something was amiss, and we did what we're supposed to do.
So we're asking parents to put that same faith in the people that you're saying.
Yes.
At this point, based on what we know, it seems unlikely that there will be any long-term effects. And that is based on the fact that the exposures were short-term, that the information that we have about people who have come up and complained of different symptoms were generally mild, and that even those who were hospitalized were those patients who had underlying conditions. So, go ahead.
There were a few days in between the level of 1 ppm that you gave and then the different level for pregnant women. What do you tell pregnant women who maybe drank in between those days? Will you be monitoring them?
I think it's one thing that may not have been very clearly explained, and let me give me a second to try and explain it this time. And that is when the initial calculations and all subsequent calculations of the screening level were done, they took into account 10, factor of 10, as a protection for pregnant women and any other vulnerable population.
But isn't that the levels you're talking about there were short-term exposures? How can the CDC even discuss long-term impacts when no one is testing in the homes to see what the longer-term exposure at those smaller levels is? Shouldn't somebody be testing in the homes?
We are not saying that there will be no. What I'm saying is that based on everything that we do know today, the experts agree that is not likely, that is very unlikely. And we have been meeting with your health state health officials, and we'll be working with them to support them in any activity that will include surveillance of the population in West Virginia so that any potential health effects that are shown can be identified.
Again, Sean Garvin, EPA. What I can tell you is, as I said, it's state lead and states, the ones who are putting together the protocols and working with the water company. What I can tell you, what we look at under the Safe Drinking Water Act is the distribution system. The idea is if the levels in the distribution system are below the screening levels or whatever the pertinent health focus you're looking at the time, then if homes flush their systems appropriately and follow the guidelines, then there shouldn't be any issues in the home. So the Safe Drinking Act really looks at the system itself, and when we look at and when we provide support to the state, that's what we're looking at as a protocol that will address the distribution system, address the drinking water system, and then with appropriate flushing, the water coming into the homes will be appropriate water.
The levels in tap water in homes would not be a helpful piece of data to have.
What I'm saying is the Safe Drinking Water Act looks at the distribution system, and when looking at making sure that there's clean water, you focus on making sure the distribution system is below the screening levels, and then make sure and get information out to the citizens on how best to flush their system so that the water that they are getting is the water from the distribution system.
At the same time, this morning, after a hearing, Dr. Tierney, the state health official, said if you smell water coming out of your shower that might smell funny, it might be a good idea to run it a little longer before you get in. And that's something that we had never heard before. At the same meeting, the local health official said, I'm not sure the water's safe. Why are we hearing different things from different officials?
Well, I can't answer to what Dr. Tierney said. She's here, and she certainly can address that. What I can tell you and what we look at is we look at the levels, and the levels that we have seen have been either non-detect or at very low parts per billion, which is magnitudes of order below the screening level that CDC has set.
Then why are kids passing out at schools?
Well, my understanding, and the folks from the school district were here, my understanding there were other issues that were going on in the school as well and not necessarily related to this, but they would have to be in the position to address that.
Yes. Here, to be clear, is, yes, the Safe Drinking Water Act looks at the distribution system, but after the water use ban was lifted and we're testing water in homes, in the river, in hotels ourselves, we ourselves can smell it. Independent experts we've contracted with can smell the water. We've been told it's safe. Are you at any point going to look at the differentials in plumbing systems? We have copper pipe, we have lead pipe, we have polypropylene pipe, and science will tell us very clearly that different molecules bond to different things over different periods of time. And obviously, after the water use ban has been lifted, if we're still smelling the water in the way we are, and even recently people tell us they're still smelling the water, there's some amount of chemical somewhere. Whether it's in the water or not, maybe at the source, no. But still somewhere in the plumbing system, it must be, must it not, if you can still smell it? Well, that's what we're all trying to get at.
No, and it's a very appropriate question. And we look at things in terms of health levels. CDC has set a screening level. Doesn't mean there is potentially zero in there. It means it's below detect, it's below the level in which it has a adverse health impact. And subsequently, you may be in a position where you still have odors of something. It doesn't necessarily mean that your water is above a level that exceeds the health standard. And so continuing to be able to flush, continuing to making sure that you have flushed and done it appropriately is really what you need to do. Just because you have an odor doesn't necessarily mean that you have water that isn't good to use.
But if I may ask, you do not know that if you have not representatively sampled water inside homes with different types of plumbing systems. So how much water do we flush? If you still smell an odor in 2 weeks, do you just flush more?
I'm sorry, I didn't get to the second part of your question, which was the issue with regards to the piping. We feel that it's unlikely that this chemical is bonding to your piping, but we understand that issue has been raised. We are working with other technical experts to look at that further. But as I said, we feel that that's not a likely scenario based on this chemical.
You said EPA officials have been on site since about 2 days in. Do we have any idea how long that leaked?
Excuse me?
How long that chemical leaked into the before it even got to the river? Do we have any idea how long it was leaking?
There's an investigation underway, so I can't answer that question right now. There are a number of federal, state agencies and officials on site. Trying to determine that.
Are there still concerns about leaks? Anything else?
Right now, we feel that the site is stable. There are still folks on site who are addressing it. We still expect that there's probably chemicals in the ground. The process is it's even with the high waters yesterday, we did not see anything coming off the site. There has been booms, trenches, other things put into place, and that investigation is ongoing. We helped to comment on a remedial plan that the state has put together on this, along with other federal and state agencies. And so that activity continues.
And now, I know I've seen a lot of officials working out there by the water, and a lot of us do still smell that chemical. What I've been told, and I think what a lot of us have been told through this time, is it works like natural gas. Essentially, that chemical, that smell is added to it so that you know it's there. So if we can smell it, is it not there in what you guys are seeing right now?
I don't know if it's added to. I think that's just the natural smell of the chemical.
We've heard, with all due respect to everyone up there, many people deferring to other people. I understand there's a lot of agencies involved. There's a big issue in the community. There's no faith. There's no faith in the water. There's no faith in the system. Clearly, one of the issues is people would like their homes tested. They're worried about the pipes. If the state has the lead, you in particular are the boss here, can you tell the agencies to go out and make sure that this happens, that they test the homes so that people can get their faith back?
I'm not sure that I could tell you that we're going to go out and test 100,000 homes.
Not 100,000.
But I think, I don't have a problem in looking at testing samples. I noticed Channel 3 last night did their own independent test. As I recall, what I saw, they all came back, had no detect. So, it would be something that I'll be happy to consider as far as being able to do some samples.
Governor, I have a question for you as well. Is it, with making these decisions, is it true that the state hired a group named Matrick to help with this?
I believe that General Matrick was one of the testing labs.
Matrick was one of the testing labs that participated in the initial testing process at the 1 part per million and did some work for us analytically on the PPH testing, and then that was followed on in conjunction with work with the EPA, and it was taken to other labs that had equipment that was more sophisticated to go down to the lower levels.
There were several labs who did the testing during this whole cycle.
So do they continue to help right now?
Right now they are not one of the labs that it is continuing to test. There are three labs. There's the water company lab, there's a lab in Beaver, West Virginia, Reich Lab, and then the DHHR lab. Those are the three labs that are testing at the appropriate thresholds for the 10 parts per billion.
Okay, and did we rely on them for any kind of results in the beginning, before the CDC, before the EPA, anything like that?
I understand we didn't rely on a lab other than lab results from a GCMS piece of equipment and a lab analyst. What we used is the interagency team working together with review by EPA and CDC of the method that was used, and that method was used across several labs, and then it was cross-checked across multiple labs to ensure There's an EPA standard for a 40% redundancy related to certain testing, and that's the protocol that we use to sample within the 10 parts per billion across the system. And as it relates to the school question that came up earlier, we have tested 108 schools, and we came up at the non-detect level at 10 parts per billion. As it relates to this particular school incident today and the line break, I can't tell you anything other than we're going to go back out and retest those two schools after it's been flushed.
So in your opinion, would you say, may I ask one more question, please? In your opinion, would you say that although the company on the board has former chemical company CEOs, chemical alliance zone lawyers, all of these people on there, that it was still an unbiased look at what we needed
we're
to do?
We're using a standard that's an EPA standard for a test methodology. We're using equipment across the system.
That's all the time we have. Governor Tomlin announced through Twitter tonight he is directing his team to evaluate home testing options. The audio of this briefing is available on our website, wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.